We're talking about what supplements do for our body this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The past decade has been a tough one for the makers of supplements. There's this whole raft of research in the early 2010s saying that multivitamins do nothing for us. And fast forward to today, and there's research that finds certain supplements have been proven to help manage certain medical conditions. Lots of qualifiers there. What do we know? People are buying them. More than three quarters of Americans take some sort of dietary supplement, whether it's vitamins, minerals, herbal remedies, performance boosters, diet pills. Do you take a vitamin or do you take calcium supplements or fish oils? Why do you take them? Have you seen a difference in your health? Do you take supplements for heart health? We're at 800-642-1234. Through the hour, your questions, your situation. Dr. Erin Mikos is Director of Women's Cardiovascular Health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. She's an Associate Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology, and her research focuses on women and heart disease, vitamin D, and cardiovascular health in particular. Dr. Mikos, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me here.
So as a cardiologist, you're working with patients every day in a clinical setting. What trends are you seeing? What are they talking to you about in terms of supplement use?
Right. So I'm a preventive cardiologist, so that's my focus. And I got interested in this because, I mean, these are so commonly used. You know, one out of two adults take some kind of supplement. And, you know, my research focused on, you know, what benefit are these individuals getting out of these supplements and is there potential harm? You know, as a preventive cardiologist, I really am encouraging all patients to follow a healthy lifestyle throughout the lifespan. That's probably the best way to prevent cardiovascular disease is through a healthy diet and getting regular physical activity. But unfortunately, many adults think that, you know, taking a supplement can confer heart health, and our research and others really has not shown that to be the case.
Well, we live in such a fast world, too. I mean, can a pill just solve a problem? Do you hear that philosophy?
Well, you know, there is unfortunately no magic bullet, you know, for heart health. And, you know, again, a healthy lifestyle is probably throughout one's lifespan is probably the best way for prevention. But, you know, more so than just the fact that maybe they don't work and a waste of money, you know, some of my research is focused on there may be actually potential harm. You know, the supplement industry is not regulated the same way as prescription drugs are. And, you know, there even though that dietary supplements are not intended to treat or diagnose or cure disease, you know, many people think they're taking that purpose. But we're concerned, you know, some of my research has shown some harm potentially with calcium supplements. And so I think that there needs to be some level of caution that more is not necessarily better. And that if someone actually has a true deficiency, you know, they can be used to treat certain conditions. But most healthy adults do not need to take supplements.
Well, we're going to get to the calcium research in just a bit, but can you kind of give us a definition of what can be considered a supplement? What is in this family?
Right. So I think, you know, most people maybe don't realize that, you know, dietary supplements, you know, are not regulated the same way by the FDA. They fall under the kind of the same umbrella as food, and it includes a whole host of products that are contain a dietary ingredient that's intended to supplement diet. So this can include vitamins, minerals, herbs, botanicals, amino acids, enzymes, and they can come in different forms like tablets, capsules, powders, liquids, and energy bars. And, you know, I think that many people think that, you know, just because that they're natural, you know, in some way that they're, that it's not dangerous, but these can have biological effects and there can be drug-drug interactions between supplements and prescription medications. So it's important that people taking these, you know, discuss them with their physicians. But the Dietary Supplement and Health Act of 1994, you know, is the one that, you know, governs supplements under a different set of regulations. And so federal law does not require dietary supplements to be proven safe or even efficacious by FDA satisfaction before they're marketed. So they can be put on the shelf before they're proven safe or marketed, unlike prescription drugs, which have to go under extensive review before they get a licensing indication, and usually from trials that show safety and efficacy. But this law doesn't require that manufacturers or sellers of supplements, prove that these claims are accurate or truthful. And the FDA's first opportunity to take action is after there's been some risk where they've showed that the products have been adulterated or misbranded, after the product enters
the
market.
It's after the fact.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Erin Mikos. She's our guide on this vast world of supplements. She's a cardiologist and director of women's cardiovascular health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. What questions do you have about dietary and nutritional supplements? What do you want to know? Are you taking a certain supplement now for a condition? How is it going? Have you talked to your physician about it? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Mikos, what are some of the most commonly used dietary supplements that you find over and over in your patients are using?
Yeah, so most commonly it's probably a multivitamin. And, at least in a multivitamin, we haven't really identified harm because usually the amount of the ingredients is relatively small and close to the recommended daily allowance, as opposed to some of these other single ingredient ones where there can be massive doses of a compound. And again, more is not better. And sometimes they can be harmful, like ones that are antioxidants or niacin have been shown to be, associated with increased risk of mortality. But so multivitamin is probably the most common. And then a lot of people take vitamin D and calcium for bone health. Probably 40% are calcium supplements. And then there's a whole host of other ones. But it's estimated that, 23% of emergency room visits each year are due to adverse effects through supplements. Especially I get concerned about some of these weight loss or other ones marketed for sexual enhancement, those supplements, many of them shown to actually been contaminated or adulterated with actual, pharmaceuticals.
Well, some of the weight loss supplements were taken off the market years ago. Are there still supplements out there for weight loss?
Well, yes, there's supplements out there. The problem is I don't know the ones that are out there if they're harmful or not, because the problem is that they're not regulated. They can be put on the market. It's just kind of this wild, wild west. Like, there's no regulation or oversight, really, for most of these things. There was the concern with a recent paper, JAMA Network Open, last year in 2018, that kind of reviewed some of the FDA's records of supplements that have been pulled off the shelf. And there was nearly 800 reported dietary supplements that had been adulterated, meaning that they actually contained, pharmaceuticals that was not on the label. The ones that were the most concerning for being adulterated were sexual enhancement drugs, which actually contained, 80% of them contained sildenafil, or otherwise known as Viagra. So it was like a prescription medication that was in these supplements. And the other ones were for weight loss. And those were supplements that had been pulled off between 2007 to 2016. About 800 of them had been identified is adulterated. So that's not too long ago.
We're talking about dietary supplements with cardiologist Erin Mikos of Johns Hopkins University. Are you someone with a vitamin deficiency? Did your physician recommend supplements or a change in diet? Do you take a multivitamin every day? When did you start? What is your reason behind that? And physicians, how often do your patients say they're taking supplements? When do you recommend them? Be part of the conversation right now, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Erin Mikos right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the vast array of dietary supplements and what they do for our body. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Most American adults, 4 in 5, have tried supplements. The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, oversees the safety of supplements, and nearly all adults say the agency should have this responsibility. However, 7 in 10 think the FDA is unable to keep them safe with the existing regulatory structure. This is surveying by Pew Charitable Trusts in recent months. Are you taking vitamins now? Do you have a vitamin deficiency? Did your physician recommend supplements or change in diet? Do you take a multivitamin? What does it do for you? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Johns Hopkins cardiologist Erin Mikos studies cholesterol, fats, vitamin D, and she stays with us. Let's go right to the phones now. Dave is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I love your show, Kate.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Yes, and I just wanted you to know I have a hyphenated name, and my husband has a hyphenated name. Our children have 4 surnames, you know, all hyphenated, and someday when they choose a spouse or mate.
Well, this is a big preview, a big run-up, Dave, to vitamins here, and what is your question, but thank you.
Oh, yeah, I love hyphenated names. They tell you all you need to know. I have a severely compromised immune system, and I'm looking for some supplements I can take so that when I have relations, it'll be less likely I pass on my condition to my partners.
Thanks, Dave. Dr. Mikos, what can supplements do to boost our immune system?
So I'm a cardiologist, but I'm not aware of anything that supplements can do to boost the immune system. Again, these have not been studied in randomized clinical trials the same way as prescription medications. And, again, there's just no evidence there. People really, want to take something, because of the promise of hope and health, but they just haven't been studied the same way. Even look at vitamin C for the common cold. There was a large meta-analysis of trials that really show that vitamin C supplements doesn't prevent the common cold. So if people want to take vitamin C, I think the best way to take it is through food sources where you get fiber and other nutritions rather than something that's been packaged in a pill form. But unfortunately, there's just not evidence for the vast majority that these supplements, help health. They can be treated for specific, specific indications for people who have specific deficiencies, people who are vegan, are at risk for B12 deficiency because that's only found in animal products. But most people can get all the vitamins they need through a heart-healthy diet. It's different than it was a number of years ago where foods were limited and frank vitamin deficiency was possible, where the vitamin C deficiency caused scurvy or thiamine deficiency called beriberi disease. But now that diets are more varied and fortified, there's a lot of fortification of the foods that we get. Frank vitamin D deficiency is very rare, and most common occurring diseases, including different immunodeficiencies and cardiovascular disease and cancers have a multifactorial cause. So it's really unlikely that a supplement ingested once a day can confer, heart and other health benefits.
So if I feel like a cold's coming on or I'm about to board a plane and I take my vitamin C, that may not be helping me in any way?
The evidence to date doesn't show that vitamin C supplements can prevent a cold. Really the best way to keep your immune system, strong for most people is, getting regular sleep, eating a healthy diet with fruits and vegetables, throughout, one's lifespan, getting regular physical activity, taking good care of yourself. But unfortunately, the answer isn't in a supplement.
We're talking with Dr. Erin Mikos. She's a cardiologist who studies supplement use, and she's with us as we navigate this vast array of supplements that are out there. Are you currently taking a dietary supplement for your heart? How often are you taking them? Have you noticed that it's helping in any way? And why did you start? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Margo now in Madison. Hi, Margo.
Yeah, hi. If she is a cardiologist who studies supplement use, then perhaps she's aware that there are differences among supplements. Some of them are food grade. Vitamin C with bioflavonoids would have a different absorption rate than some ascorbic acid type vitamin C. Now, the reason that the supplement industry is doing well is because older people are aware that as they age, they don't absorb their nutrients from food as efficiently as they once did. And so this is their insurance policy. And I think that to dismiss these supplements unilaterally is wrong.
Margo,
that are of a higher quality and are necessary. For instance, we don't absorb vitamin D from the sun efficiently in a northern hemisphere, especially as we age.
Margo, thank you for the call. Dr. Mikos, can you respond to that, how we absorb vitamins and what ones are really necessary?
Right. So it is true that older adults, you know, they may not absorb the fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin D as much when they get older. I just want to, and again, I didn't say that no one should ever use supplements. I think that they should be used in discretion with their doctors to treat certain conditions. But I wanted to emphasize that, you know, most people who are taking these are healthy and are not taking them under any kind of diet physician recommendations. And there actually can be some harm. That's what people don't seem to realize is that, you know, both fish oil and ginkgo biloba can increase the risk of bleeding when combined with blood thinners, and St. John's wort can interact with antidepressants. And, for example, biotin, which people take for hair and skin nails, can actually interfere with the lab assay for one of the tests we do to look for heart attacks called a troponin. So it can lead to false negatives of the test. So it's really important that people discuss the supplement use. And, you know, more is not necessarily better. You know, people are really concerned about vitamin D for bone health, and it's important to have levels above 20 nanograms per milliliter. But really high dose of vitamin D actually may be harmful. There was a study in JAMA 2010 where they looked at, you know, 500,000 international units of vitamin D, so a huge dose once a year. But this was actually associated with more falls and more fractures, you know, worse bone health than benefit. And we saw this also in a randomized clinical trial published last year in JAMA 2019. Now, these were healthy people who didn't have osteoporosis, but very high vitamin D at 4,000 or 10,000 actually showed, you know, worse bone mineral density instead of better. So I think people need to have a level of caution that these things are not always safe, especially at massive doses. You know, multivitamin, which is generally lower doses, has really been seen to be safe, although, you know, my research didn't find any benefit for heart health. But I would have some caution with these really high levels of supplements and to really understand, you know, why are you taking it? You know, what is the health benefit you're hoping to gain?
And the underlying reason.
To your doctors about it. And it is, some supplements are indicated for some people, but, you know, it's a $300 billion industry, and most people who are taking supplements are actually not people at risk for deficiency. Most people who take supplements are actually the worried well who are otherwise healthy and probably not gaining much benefit from them.
Let's bring in Kate now, joining us from Milwaukee with a question about iron. Hi, Kate.
Good morning. Just two comments. I had kind of a successful reversal of anemia due to supplementation and complete change in diet, but I did it after having a complete blood test, and I think that's really important because you actually can identify where the deficiencies lie. I agree with the doctor in terms of many healthy people who are probably taking things that they don't necessarily need. But I eliminated wheat and dairy and eggs from my diet, changed some supplementation, and I did it with a holistic nutritionist. And my actual physician, my OBGYN, was actually quite amazed at the results over several, really couple of years of really changing my overall health, especially in regard to my iron.
Yeah, so this was a process. And Kate, we have to pause right here because we're getting close to a break. But Dr. Mikos, it sounds like Kate was really combining diet and supplements here to address the iron deficiency.
And well, first of all, she did it under a diagnosis. Like I said, we can use supplements for specific conditions. So anemia can be from iron deficiency. It can be from B12 deficiency, folate deficiency. So, you know, in order to know what the treatment was, it needed a proper workup, a blood test. And she did this under guidance of, you know, physicians who knew she was taking it. And so, you know, that's the situation. Again, you know, vitamins can be used when there's a clear deficiency, you know, a documented iron deficiency, although one should figure out the cause of why someone's iron deficient and try to correct any reversible causes. But, you know, my concern was that most people who are taking supplements are not doing this for any specific diagnosis or not, you know, with any medical workup or under any advice from their doctors.
We're exploring dietary supplements and what they do for us with cardiologist Aaron Mikos of Johns Hopkins University. Is there something you've wondered about, a certain vitamin or a mineral? Do you take a multivitamin? When did you start? How did you talk to your physician about supplements? Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back after a news update with Dr. Aaron Mikos right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And just a heads up on coverage plans this morning. President Trump is expected to make a statement at the White House regarding the Iranian missile attack against U.S. targets in Iraq. We will bring you live NPR coverage starting at 8 this morning on the Ideas Network. That's live coverage of President Trump's remarks beginning at 8. And do stay with us with WPR for ongoing coverage throughout the day. Right now, we are talking about supplements. About 80% of adults in our country have used supplements for dietary or other purposes. And according to a recent survey by the Pew Research Center, most adults think supplements for dietary purposes are safe. Are you a nutritionist? What are your thoughts on supplements? Do you think they're effective? When do you advise supplements versus a change in diet? And what questions do you have about them? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us WPR Mornings. Cardiologist Aaron Mikos of Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine stays with us. Her research focuses on women and heart disease, vitamin D, and cardiovascular health. Let's go back to the phones now. Christine is joining us from Glenwood this morning. Hi, Christine.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm delighted to speak to you. I've always wondered this question. With everything that we hear about supplements, why is it considered beneficial for manufacturers to fortify flour, cereals, milk, etc.?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So that's important because of to prevent folate deficiency, because women of childbearing age who don't get enough folate, there's a risk for neural tube defects. So we've you know, been fortifying foods with folate, and that's really decreased the risk of that. And women of childbearing age often do take a prenatal vitamin with folate in it. And so I think there, you know, again, the question is whether we, now that a lot of foods have fortification, whether there's any benefit for taking supplements on top of that. And for most adults, healthy adults, the answer is probably no. But it's interesting because when you brought up the fortification of grains, because in China, they don't fortify cereals and grains with folic acid, and they have a high rate of hypertension. And the most randomized clinical trials have shown any benefit really for supplements for cardiovascular health, but there was a study done in China about people with high blood pressure, and folate did decrease the risk of stroke in that population, but it was never seen in Western populations. So it may be that in cases where there's actually nutritional deficiency, such as possibly folate deficiency in China who doesn't have the food fortification, that supplements may work in select populations.
Christine, thanks for the call. You mentioned prenatal vitamins. We are seeing them a lot among people who are pregnant, women who are pregnant, and there's a lot on the shelf. What do you make of those?
I mean, again, I think that if you're taking something for a specific purpose for a short amount of time, I think that is fine, and women should get enough folate during childbearing or at risk for pregnancy. You know, but the vast majority of supplements out there, again, people are not taking them for any particular health purpose. And, you know, in some of these combinations of high dose things, there can actually potentially be harm. In terms of the multivitamins for the general population, you know, we looked at this in a large meta-analysis in 2018 in the journal Circulation Cardiovascular Outcomes, and we included a study that over, you know, multiple studies, 18 studies that had over 2 million participants total. And with multivitamins, our meta-analysis didn't find, you know, any evidence that multivitamin supplements improved cardiovascular outcomes. They didn't show harm, but there was no heart benefit with multivitamins. But as I mentioned, certain things can potentially be harmful. You know, high-dose biotin, as I mentioned, can interfere with the blood assay that looks for a heart attack. It interferes with the troponin assay. And certain compounds can have drug-drug interactions with prescription medications. That's why it's important to discuss with their doctors if they're taking it, such as fish oils and ginkgo biloba and St. John's wort, a number of examples that can interact with prescription medications. I'm concerned about some, we can talk about some of my research about high-dose calcium supplements.
You looked at calcium supplements and their association to cardiovascular disease. Why do patients often need to take calcium? What's happening in the body?
So it's important to get your recommended daily allowance of calcium. And so for most people, you know, that's 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium, but people over the age of 70 should be taking 1,200 milligrams of calcium. So there should be some concerted effort to get enough calcium through your diet. And there are many foods that that are not just dairy foods, although dairy is a good source of calcium, but there's non-dairy foods that have calcium in too, such as beans and fish and kale and almonds and figs and oranges. So the concern that has been raised about taking sort of high-dose calcium supplements in a bolus, this was first raised by the Auckland Calcium trial in 2008. This was a randomized clinical trial of women at risk for osteoporosis, and randomized trials are our best evidence because people are randomly assigned to one intervention versus another, and we look at what the effects happen as opposed to observational studies. And in this trial, there was actually increased vascular events with calcium. There was a harm with the calcium supplements. Now, since then, studies have shown both harm and not harm. The results have been inconclusive for some different studies, but there has been a signal throughout about a concern for heart attack risk with calcium supplements. You know, I did a study a couple of years ago. It was an observational study, but we looked at calcium in the heart arteries that you can measure with cardiac CT. And we found that individuals of this study who were sort of started out with a calcium score of zero in their heart arteries and how much calcium was in their arteries, and then they had a repeat CAT scan 10 years later. And even after we controlled for multiple things, you know, age and other health factors and other cardiovascular risk factors, we saw a 22% increased risk for developing calcification in the heart arteries.
Wait,
for those
so
that
plaque,
are taking supplements.
Yeah, so plaque is building up in the arteries over that decade of taking the calcium supplements?
So calcium supplements, calcium in the arteries is a marker of plaque. The CT just really looks at the vascular calcification. So we were really measuring the calcium part of the artery, and that was 22% increased in the calcium supplements compared to non-users. But we didn't see this with diet at all. So actually more calcium through the diet was actually beneficial. Now, this was an observational study, not a trial, but we did perform a meta-analysis last year. This was in Annals of Internal Medicine last July, where we actually looked at 277 trials and 24 interventions. This is, again, randomized clinical trials are our best evidence because people are randomly assigned to one treatment or another. And we found really no heart benefits for most things except a potential benefit for fish oil with heart attacks. But getting back to calcium, we saw this 17% increased risk of stroke when calcium was taken with vitamin D. And this sort of fits the concern with the Auckland Calcium study and some other ones. So, you know, why would calcium from supplements potentially be harmful but not from diet? Well, I think it has to do with the sort of the bolus that when you take a large dose of calcium, you know, 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams all at once, pharmacological studies have shown that you can transiently raise your blood levels of calcium. And the blood levels of calcium may go back down to normal. So if you get your labs checked, you know, a few weeks later, your blood levels may be in the normal level. But immediately, sort of after ingestion, there's a transient increase. And calcium is a part of the clotting cascade. And so this transient rise in the calcium levels may trigger clotting that can lead to heart attacks and strokes.
We're talking with Dr. Erin Mikos. She's director of Women's Cardiovascular Health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And she's our guide this hour as we better understand supplements, what they do for our health, and in particular, heart health. Still time for your questions on supplements you take, ones you've always wondered about. Have you been taking a certain vitamin for years? What does it do for your health? Are you considering adding a supplement? What is it? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Mikos, earlier you called the regulation of supplements the Wild West with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. How are supplements regulated through the government?
Well, that's the problem, is that they're not, unless they're shown to be harmful. The supplement manufacturers don't have to prove to the FDA satisfaction. They don't have to prove that their supplement is safe or even efficacious before they're marketed, don't have to prove that their claim is accurate or truthful. And the FDA's first opportunity to take action against a product that presents a significant or unreasonable risk if it's altered or misbranded is really after the product enters the market. This is very different than prescription medications, drugs that have to go through extensive review before they're marketed and sold in the United States to prove safety and efficacy, as I mentioned, usually from randomized clinical trials. But supplements fall under this umbrella of food, and so they're not regulated the same way. And, you know, I mentioned earlier in the hour about the review of the FDA records where, you know, they came up with about 800 supplements over the year that actually contained, you know, were altered and had pharmaceuticals, you know, in the supplements that wasn't on the label. So I'm just concerned that people are not knowing what they're taking. And, you know, unless they're taking them for specific reasons, to really focus on a heart-healthy lifestyle, a regular diet, a physical activity, you know, for most adults, a healthy lifestyle is the foundation for prevention.
There sounds like there's some things higher on the list here than taking supplements as the first resort. Talking with Dr. Erin Mikos, she's our guide on this vast world of supplements and what they do for us. She's director of Women's Cardiovascular Health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. What questions do you have about dietary supplements? What do you want to know? Are you taking a certain supplement right now for a condition? How is it going? Still time for your questions, your experiences on taking supplements, vitamins, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with cardiologist Erin Mikos right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kedar Chirkent, and we're talking the ins and outs of dietary supplements, what they do for us, what they don't do for us. What we do know is the U.S. supplement market is big business. It's growing. It's in the U.S. alone expected to close in to $57 billion industry in the coming years. Do you take vitamin C when you feel a cold coming on? Do you feel it works to keep you healthy? What supplements do you think are making a positive change in your health? What do you know about them? Do you want more regulation from the FDA on supplements? Still time for you, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Erin Mikos is Director of Women's Cardiovascular Health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and she stays with us. Let's go to Mike now in New London with a question. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning, Kate and Doc. I thought in reference to this show, it'd be interesting. I'm 65. I live up in New London. And for the last, I think it's 4 or 5 years, I've been on a study to test the efficacy of cocoa flavonoids and or a multivitamin. It's a double-blind study through Harvard Medical School, Women and Brigham's Hospital, that I don't know which I'm taking, if I'm taking the test or a placebo for, again, cocoa flavonoids and a multivitamin. And then I get a questionnaire about twice a year about my health and certain specific, whether cancer, cardiovascular, or other. And at the end of the study, of course, they'll tell what I was on and what the effects, what the results of the study were.
Fascinating. How long is the span of the study?
You know, I don't recall offhand. But again, I'm about 4 or 5 years in. I kind of lost track. But I think it's like 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
It's something like that, not real long term.
Dr. Mikos,
thank you.
Yeah,
oh, thank you for participating in a trial. So this is our best evidence, and particularly Harvard has done some of the best randomized trials for supplements. And so this is where we get our information about whether something actually works in this kind of trial design, where you have somebody who don't know what they're taking and they're randomly assigned to one or the other, and we see if it works. And this is where we get our best evidence. Trials do take a long time to conduct, and they're expensive, which is why we don't have enough of them. And as you heard, this one's been going on 5 years, because it takes a while before heart attack events start happening until you see enough where there's a difference between the two arms. So I look forward to those results, but that's the important thing is these trials, because a lot of the studies that looked at supplements and things are all sort of observational studies. And the issue with observational study, when they just observe people who do something or don't do something and their outcomes, is that people who choose to take a supplement often have other health-seeking behaviors. You know, people who take supplements generally want to be healthy. So, you know, maybe they do other things like eat better and wear their seatbelts and brush their teeth and take better care of themselves. And so if they have better outcomes, it's really not clear whether it's due to the supplement or due to other health-seeking behaviors. We call this residual confounding in epidemiology studies. And so the kind of trial design that he just described is where we get our best evidence. The Harvard group recently finished a study about vitamin D for heart health, and where they randomized nearly 25,000 people to 2,000 international units of vitamin D versus placebo. And in that trial, you know, it did not show any benefit on heart health for vitamin D supplements or a number of other outcomes compared to placebo. And so, you know, we learn a lot from these trials, and this is where we get a lot of the information that many of these supplements don't work, although we keep holding out to find for one that does. So maybe the one he's in the trial, maybe that will show and be beneficial. But we need more trials. We need better evidence, because most people are taking these things with really no good evidence that they actually work or are safe.
Well, as we wrap up here, Dr. Mikos, as a physician, what kind of research would be really helpful on supplements that we could get a better handle on what is going on here?
Well, I definitely think the kind of randomized clinical trials that he designed are really important. Those are well-conducted trials, and so that would be our best evidence. You know, we've learned a lot about vitamin D, not being beneficial from heart health from different trials. In the past, you know, a lot of people were taking up antioxidants, for example, beta-carotene antioxidants, thinking that that would help heart health. And then they did the trials. You know, then came the trials, and the trials showed that, no, it wasn't helpful. It was actually harm. And then the United States Preventive Services Task Force now has a grade D recommendation, don't use antioxidants and beta-carotene because it's actually harmful. So we need these kind of trials to really show safety.
Yeah, we will pay attention and stay tuned. Thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Dr. Erin Mikos is a cardiologist. She's director of women's cardiovascular health at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and her research focuses on women and heart disease, vitamin D, and cardiovascular health. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's a story about a one-hit wonder from Stoughton.
So what are some of your early memories of rock and roll? For Stoughton's Bill Amundson, there's one that happened really close to home, like right down the street.
It was a normal Saturday spring morning at the Amundsen household on Norris Street in Stoughton, Wisconsin.
This is Detective Huckleberry Hound.
The year was 1960, and I was a 7-year-old boy watching Huckleberry Hound when my dad burst into the room. He said, "The band that's on the radio, they're practicing in the garage right down the street." He then proceeded to hustle my brother and I down to the old Hanson garage, where we had a front row seat to a rehearsal by Stoughton's very own one-hit wonders, the Fendermen.
Good morning, Captain. Well, good morning to you.
Phil Humphrey was living in Stoughton, working as a truck driver and taking classes at the UW when he met Jim Sundquist of Niagara, Wisconsin. The two quickly bonded over their Fender guitars and the unusual fact that they shared the same birthday, November 26th, 1937. They formed a duo, dubbed themselves the Fendermen, and began playing gigs at small clubs and bars around southern Wisconsin.
Well, I'm an old Bill Skinner.
Their set was mostly country and rockabilly standards, but they couldn't help but notice that folks went wild for their rather unhinged cover of the old Jimmy Rogers song Blue Yodel No. 8, usually called Mule Skinner Blues. They tried selling the 45 on their own, with little luck, until a lacrosse DJ named Lindy Shannon became obsessed with the song and played it into their local top 10. From there, it was picked up by the Soma label out of Minneapolis, who released it nationally and sent it soaring into the Billboard Hot 100, where it reached number 5 in June of 1960. By the end of the summer, Mule Skinner Blues had sold well over 1 million copies. The song itself was unusual. It featured just the two Fendermen, drenched in echo, no drums or bass, with Humphrey's delirious whooping and yodeling. Highlights included a number of deranged yucks and ha-has, and concluded with the classic
cha-cha-cha.
As the song took off, the now four-piece band continued to rehearse in that old garage on Main Street in Stoughton, and we kept a lookout for them so we could gather outside at a moment's notice. Mostly, we just stared in reverent jaw-dropping awe, not believing our luck. After all, the Fendermen, although practically teenagers themselves, were the biggest celebrities any of us had ever seen in our short, small-town Stoughton lives. By summer's end, they'd opened for Johnny Cash and Kitty Wells and appeared at the Grand Old Opry. A performance on Dick Clark's American Bandstand would follow, where they shared the bill with teen heartthrob Bobby Darin, who seemed downright subdued by comparison. And then, just like that, it was over. They released a full album called You Guessed It, Mule Skinner Blues, and continued to play as a popular live act. But amidst legal wranglings with their record company and without a follow-up hit, they disbanded in 1961. But Mule Skinner Blues lives on. To date, it has sold over 4.5 million copies worldwide and is a staple on oldies radio stations everywhere. The Fendermen may have provided Stoughton with only a footnote in the history of American music, but they made a lifelong rock and roll fan out of one 7-year-old living just around the corner on Norris Street.
Cha-cha-cha!
Bill Amundsen is an artist and rock and roll fan from Stoughton, and his essay was originally published in the Stoughton Courier Hub. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Colbert.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.